This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering.
Governor Healey says her administration's getting ready to file a $750 million tax relief package with the state legislature. She says the plan focuses on affordability and competitiveness and equity with benefits for families, seniors, and those dealing with high housing costs.
Sound there from WBZ-TV talking about Governor Healey's new $742 million tax reform proposal, which Healey unveiled earlier this week. One of the biggest changes, a $600 child and family tax credit for each dependent under 13 or over 65, something Healey says can make a big difference.
The child and family tax credit would make sure that large families are not excluded from receiving the full amount of support they need. And it will benefit Black and brown families who are more likely to rely on informal child care and have been left out of pre-existing credits.
That's Governor Healey at a press conference at the YMCA in Lynn on Monday. So the question is, what does Healey's proposal mean for you and for the state? We have two people here to help us answer that. Evan Horowitz is the executive director at the Center for State Policy Analysis. Welcome back, Evan.
Thanks, Tiziana. It's great to be here.
And Marie Frances Rivera is the president of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. Welcome back to you as well, Marie Frances.
Thank you.
So I'll stay with you, Marie Frances, and let's just start with your overall reactions to the package as it came out.
Sure. So you started out by mentioning the Child and Family Tax Credit, which is incredible. It's going to be one of the most progressive child and family tax credit programs in the entire country. And we know during the pandemic, the federal government gave a lot of one-time assistance to people, $300 checks. We know there are studies that prove that this actually decreases poverty, every payment that you provide to a family. So that part is great. And there are also some features in there that would widen racial wealth disparities in Massachusetts.
Like the
cuts to the estate tax, the decreases in short-term capital gains rates.
So, Evan Horowitz, you, what are your, what's your reaction, your big read from the package?
It's easy to get distracted by some of the small stuff, but I do think I'm glad you started with a child and dependent tax credit, because that really is the biggest deal. And in some ways, it's not even worth thinking of it as a tax credit, because it works differently than most tax credits. It's really just checks for people. It's really just money for people. It doesn't depend on... You don't have to itemize anything. You don't have to owe taxes. You don't have, I mean, it's structured through tax code, but it's just, we're going to give checks to people who have children. And it's a very, Marie Frances says, a proven way to reduce poverty and help families.
So one question that I had on that before we move into some of the other pieces is I also noted people with dependents over 65 as well. Is that new or different? It struck me, but that I'm not, you know, I don't have my nose in tax policy all the time.
So it's a combination of two different credits. So there have been dependent credits that are more geared toward somebody who's taking care of an older family member, but now we're combining those and making them more generous.
All right. So a couple of thoughts based on the things that the two of you said. Let's play a game show for just a second to start, okay? And Evan, I'll go to you first. Backing into...
I don't have to, like, hit a buzzer?
You don't.
Or
no,
okay.
No buzzers.
I don't understand the game show rules.
Backing into... You have 30 seconds to back into Maura Healey's priorities based on what's in this proposal.
Well, half the money is in that child and dependent tax credit. So that's by far the biggest priority. The next biggest priority is, I guess, what she's calling an effort to make the state more competitive. I'm very skeptical about the efficacy of those efforts, though I do understand the need for it. That's my 30-second or probably under 30-second sense.
And yours, Marie Frances?
It's a mixed bag. I agree with what Evan said. And to dig in a little bit deeper on, you know, the cuts to the estate tax and the cuts to the capital gains that are really highly targeted to the wealthiest families here in Massachusetts, we really need to take a closer look at that, especially when the legislature starts debating this package.
Okay, so I do want to get into that. But before we do, I want to stay with the child tax credit stuff and the dependent tax credit stuff a little bit longer, because this is an area that's big. It's been one of the biggest headlines, and there are a lot of questions about it. We reached out to our texting group. They had questions, and I want to ask you guys this one from Terry in Cambridge. Why are tax cuts proposed for each child, even for families that don't need the credit? For low-income families, wouldn't it be better to include Baker's proposal former Governor Charlie Baker's proposal to raise the state's no tax status threshold by 50%. For disabled persons, wouldn't it be better to protect them from inheritance taxes so they can stay in their family housing and have income to draw upon? Now, there's more to Terry's question, but I want to break those pieces down because Evan Horowitz, as I understand it, the no tax status, which we need to explain for listeners, was a piece that was central to Governor Baker's approach and is not in Maura Healey's. How would it affect the same kinds of objectives that the dependent tax credits are trying to achieve?
Well, I mean, there's overlap in the sense that both of them are trying to help people who need help. So there are people who do not owe income tax if they earn a very low amount of money.
That's what no tax status means.
Your no tax status. So yes, it would be a progressive thing to expand that. But you make choices. You know, we have this amount of money and we think the best use of it is here, the best use of it is there. I think with the thing to really kind of understand about the child and dependent tax credit is that one of the beauties of it is its simplicity. A lot of times tax credits fail because they are too complicated to apply for, or fail is too strong, but they don't achieve their maximum impact. So EITC is a program like this, a very powerful
program.
Earned
income tax credit.
Yeah, helps a lot of people, but you need to apply for it, and it's not easy, and there are all kinds of obstacles to applying for it. And one of the beauties of the child tax credit as it's structured now is no obstacles. We don't have a cap. You don't have to prove you're eligible. You don't have to earn under – it's just – everybody's going to get it. And that has a tremendous virtue in terms of actually reaching people. Because as you might imagine, the people who face the most obstacles, who really struggle the most with rules and regulations and meeting, tend to be the lowest income people. Maybe they're not native English speakers. They have other challenges. So making a program universal really ensures that you're reaching the most vulnerable people.
So just to remind, that's Evan Horowitz, Executive Director of the Center for State Policy Analysis. We also have Marie Frances Rivera of the Mass Budget and Policy Center here as we break down Governor Maura Healey's tax package. Marie Frances, anything you want to add there?
Sure. I agree with Evan about the simplicity of the child and family tax credit. I also do agree with, I think Terry was the texter.
Terry from Cambridge.
That, yes, it could be more highly targeted. You could have a cap on income. So those are things to consider moving forward.
Okay. So now, we zeroed in at the beginning with one of the big things. Evan, you love the dependent tax credit partly because of its simplicity. Marie Frances, you've hit equity a great deal. We move into the other side now. So Governor Healey's very clear that part of her objective is competitiveness. And there are a package of things that are designed, according to the governor, to get us there. There is a capital gains tax decrease. There's an increase in the threshold on the estate tax to $3 million. There are a couple of other things there. Marie Frances, you have already said your concern is that that actually exacerbates inequality. Now finish that thought, right? Now that we're into that space.
Yeah. So if we look at the estate tax in particular, the estate tax is when a wealthy family or family, somebody dies and passes on their wealth. It's an intergenerational wealth transfer. And we know that, you know, nationally and here in Massachusetts, the way that especially white families increase their wealth is through these intergenerational wealth transfers. So what we're saying is we're actually going to allow more of that, and then we're going to decrease the amount of funding that's going to childcare for everybody in our state that's going to fix our roads and bridges. So, you know, that in and of itself is really exacerbating racial wealth inequality.
So, Evan, that's the argument Marie Frances just made around the equity piece of this. I've been interested in the comments you've made over the last couple of days. Your focus
I've not been
on
quiet about this.
Competitiveness, that you don't necessarily believe that if the goal is competitiveness, that this package gets us there. So talk about that a little bit.
So I do have concerns, which, you know, you hear often expressed by members of the business community about the long-term economic competitiveness of the state. Like, I just think this is something we should care about. We should want a dynamic economy. We should want an economy that produces lots of jobs. And if you're concerned about that, there are things you can do through the tax code to make the economy more competitive, to encourage businesses. What we seem to have here is a set of packages, is a package with a set of items that people are claiming will do that, but that have no evidentiary basis that they actually will accomplish those goals. And take the estate tax. I think there are real problems with the estate tax as it's currently structured in the state, and I think the estate tax really needs to be updated. For one thing, the $1 million threshold captures a lot of people who you might not consider wealthy. We have a lot of homes in the state now at the $1 million level. So raising it makes a certain amount of sense. But you don't have to raise it in a way that is a tax cut. You could raise it in a way that's revenue neutral. And the idea that this is somehow...
I got to tell you, I don't understand what you're saying.
But you know what? Let me make the more important... Rather than waste time explaining, let me make the more important point, which is the idea that by giving a cut to people with large estates, we are helping the economy, is, I think, just fundamentally misguided. The people who are most likely to, say, move out of state in order to avoid this tax, right? They're worried about this tax. They tend to be retirees. They're people who are done with their business lives, and they're thinking about the last act of their lives and where they want to live it. And while you might think it's great to have those people in the state, it's not vital to our economy because they're not running businesses anymore. They're not creating jobs anymore. So if you want a package of tax cuts that really does help business, you want to focus on people who are running businesses or working in businesses. And the estate tax doesn't do that. So the shorthand that I have had in my head is sort of there are taxes that help wealthy people that are also good for the economy. And then there are just some tax cuts that just help wealthy people.
So give me an example of the first, and then I want to bring in a conservative voice and turn back to Marie Francis. So just quickly.
An example of the kind of thing that would help wealthy people,
and
but also changes to the corporate tax. You could imagine that changes to the corporate tax will encourage more corporations to set up here. It will also help wealthier shareholders.
Okay.
That's the kind of things. Helps wealthy people, but helps business. Estate tax only fits in the first category. Helps wealthy people,
doesn't
really
help
business.
Briefly, do you agree?
I don't fully agree.
Okay, well, let's start there, and then I'll bring in some other voices. Go ahead.
If we think about corporate taxes, there are plenty of loopholes and benefits if you compare us to other states.
Don't agree on the corporate taxes
thing?
On the
corporate tax piece.
Okay, but not necessarily do you disagree on the estate tax doesn't improve competitiveness.
I will say that I agree with Evan when he said there is a revenue neutral way. So there's a way that doesn't cost the state money, but can also make changes to benefit people.
Okay. So I'm going to stay with you, Marie Francis, but I'm going to set this up a little bit because I'm going to bring a couple conservative voices into the mix. Arguably, the Pioneer Institute is a more conservative-leaning think tank. Their analysis showed up in my email box this morning. And one of the things that Eileen McEnany says is, if Massachusetts wants to mitigate the negative economic consequences of the income surtax, okay, there's a lot of hard stuff there, but it should either eliminate the estate tax, as 38 states have done, or, like Connecticut, adopt the federal threshold of $12.3 million. So her argument is the move Mayor Hill is proposing from $1 million to $3 million really doesn't even go far enough. All right, now I'm going to bring a second voice in here. Yesterday we had Amy Carnevale, who's the new chair of the Massachusetts State Republican Party, on the show. And I asked her kind of what she thought the hidden superpower for the party was. And she said this.
It's been widely reported over the last couple of weeks, the number of individuals leaving the Commonwealth. I think that's a big concern looking ahead for the competitiveness of Massachusetts. So I think, you know, that's something that I plan to talk a lot about. And that's an area where I think the Republican Party can really add value to the dialogue and perhaps connect with voters in a way that we have not in the past.
So the outflow being an issue, competitiveness being an issue. A, do you agree that that's something that tax policy should be seeking to address? And B, what would you do? Because we've got one voice here saying this doesn't even go nearly far enough for higher income individuals.
Sure. So what I heard there was anecdote. And what we see in many studies is that people don't make decisions to move because of tax policy and tax changes. People make decisions to move because there are better schools, better transportation, you know, better resources for the business you're trying to grow or your family, right? So that's why people make moves. I think matching, you know, what you pointed out about the federal estate tax and how estates basically under $12 million aren't necessarily, taxed on the federal level, that means that we should be doing something here in Massachusetts to make sure that, you know, that revenue and that wealth is really benefiting everybody here in our state, not racing to the bottom.
Okay, so I'm going to bring in a new question now, and this is from our texting group. If you want to join our texting group, by the way, it's 617-766-0382. You text the word Boston to 617-766-0382. Leo in Cambridge says, from all the pessimists who spend their sunny days preparing for rainy ones, will the governor's tax cuts render the Commonwealth more or less prepared to support businesses and households during the next recession? So, Evan, there's a price tag to this. Budget officials said the plan would reduce tax revenue by $859 million, according to an article in the Globe.
Yeah, I think it's closer to $1 billion. I think add it all up, and the long-term annual cost is about $1 billion. And I think that is a little too big. It's an affordable thing right now. The state has a lot of cash and a lot of reserve cash. And if we were doing this for a year or two, I wouldn't have any concerns. But for a long-term plan, I think it is a little too big. And I think it does risk the fiscal health of the Commonwealth in a way that is not necessary at the moment or sound.
So, Marie Frances, if you could take it from where it is to the pieces that you think, okay, keep these in, and this is affordable, prepares us for the next recession, but grows us in the meantime.
Yeah.
The big
sure.
priorities
yeah.
are.
Yeah. I would agree with Evan. The package is too big. If you think about November of last year, the voters basically said they approved the Fair Share Amendment, right? They said, we want more money to go into education and transportation. They said, we believe that our tax system should be more fair. This essentially cuts three quarters to almost fully the additional revenues that would be coming in through the Fair Share Amendment.
If you said new revenue comes from Fair Share Amendment, loss of revenue, you're saying they would offset each other?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, based
okay.
on these proposals.
So what percentage, just roughly, if it's $1 billion, let's stipulate, Evan, $1 billion, how much isn't too much of a price tag?
I would say that we have to think about it holistically. We need to make sure Massachusetts is a very unequal state. We need to make sure we get relief to people who need it most. And we also need to balance it with all the other priorities. So I wouldn't say it's a simple formula.
The number's not the way to think about it.
The numbers are the way to think about it, but we also have to ground it in our values and what we're trying to accomplish here.
So last question for each of you. You know, Evan, is it going to pass? Can this get passed in this legislature or some version of this get passed in this legislature?
I think a lot depends on what tax revenue looks like in the coming months. There is a chance that tax revenues hold up and it continues to look like the state is in very good fiscal shape, in which case much of this could pass. I mean, I'd be surprised. We didn't talk much about the short-term capital gains. I'd be surprised if that gets picked up, but other parts of it could easily pass. It's also possible that if tax revenue turns and in April there's a shortfall, in which case I think a lot of this kind of falls away as people start to get more worried about the long-term fiscal picture.
And Marie Frances, just briefly, what are you hearing, especially from legislators that you speak to, about their appetite for this?
There seems to be an appetite for this. There seems to be an appetite for the child and family tax credit. If we look last year, there was some appetite and some debate around a package that Baker proposed that was somewhat similar. But we'll see through the legislative back and forth what ends up actually making it through.
Well, congratulations. You once again made tax policy fascinating. The two of you, Marie Frances Rivera is at the Mass Budget and Policy Center. Evan Horowitz is at the Center for State Policy Analysis. I appreciate you both. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.